over at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff from a talented cast of writers over there for you to check out. Daily NHL from Parker Michaels. We'll have plenty of coverage for this weekend's NFL playoffs. Obviously, lots of coverage for Super Bowl 54 as well, once we know who's going to be in that. We've also got plenty of stuff going on in college basketball, the NBA, Major League Baseball, not that far away. So tons of things for you to keep an eye out for over there. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. A couple of guests on the program here today, and our leadoff hitter is Greg Peterson from the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast, also regular contributor to VSiN. Greg, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Adam.
Well, I appreciate your time as always here, man. And let's go ahead and start with a burning question here. Is Maryland ever going to win a road game?
Oh, man, this is a team that under Mark Turgeon, it's actually not the fact that they don't win true road games. I will say that they are 2-9 against the spread in their last 11 true road games. It's big road games that they don't win every single time. I think in Mark Turgeon's tenure, they've won once against a ranked team on the road. It's absolutely amazing what happens with this team.
So is that something that, you know, obviously, I mean, you follow the markets very, very closely playing every game. Are we starting to see that built into the market where maybe, you know, these teams at home against Maryland are getting even a little bit more of an inflated home court advantage just because the Terps can't win?
I don't think we saw it yesterday when we saw Wisconsin versus Maryland, because that closing number was in a lot of places 2.5. You saw a couple twos out there as well, but you'd expect it to be a little bit more if it's more inflated, because we've seen it all year with the Big Ten. Big Ten true home teams, 34-6 straight up. Now, I will say that if you were betting on home teams yesterday, depending on your number, it didn't necessarily go the best for you. They were either 0-2-1 or 0-3 against the spread. So obviously a little bit of a doldrum there. You had Northwestern become the second team in conference to lose a conference home game by more than 5 points. So it's absolutely ridiculous what is happening. But I do sense that in the Big Ten in general, we're seeing these home teams in play. We saw that in Nebraska versus Ohio State line. Ohio State, very good team. They should be heavily favored against Nebraska. I don't know if 17 to 18 points was the right number, though. Northwestern was probably a little bit less of a dog than you'd expect against an Iowa team that, going into the 2019-20 season, was the worst covered team in true road games over the past 3 years. Obviously, they're changing that. True road win over Iowa State, Syracuse, and now Northwestern. So they've been able to rectify that a little bit. But I think that in the Big Ten in general, we're seeing that turnaround.
So it does seem like it's more substance than narrative. And we'll talk about this when we get to the NFL playoffs. But we know that narratives, we know that recency bias can really skew, you know, those betting lines and those betting markets. But it seems like here in college basketball, you know, that narrative isn't really impacting the line too much.
It's interesting because I think that there are some times where it's overcorrecting for a team that just had a big win. When you take a look at Evansville being able to knock off Kentucky, I still think that people are sort of looking at Evansville a little bit differently than they should, because now Evansville is starting to see regression finally with those lines. But it took Walter McCarty getting hurt, it took their top scorer DeAndre Williams getting hurt, it took their coach Walter McCarty being under Title IX investigation in order for that to all happen. That's a lot of stuff to have go down for your line to really be adjusted accordingly, because afterwards they were favored against teams like SMU, and we know how good SMU has been so far this year. So I do think that it's either too much or too little. It's hard for bookmakers to really find that break-even point. Maybe shade a team a half a point to a point based on a couple recent performances rather than going all the way to multiple points or just staying stagnant.
So this is, I guess, sort of a good segue to something that I wanted to talk about with you here today, Greg, because again, as we mentioned, you play every game side and total. So you've got to be very aware of a lot of personnel with these teams. And obviously that includes coaches. So how do you factor coaching into the handicap, and how do you sort of evaluate, you know, what is by and large a gray area?
I think that what you need to do when you take a look at some of these issues is just really take everything into account and don't overreact due to one game, because I do look at lines for the Vegas Edson Information Network. What I find is that sometimes my look at lines where I'm picking a game like 6 or 7 days earlier, oftentimes does better than my actual picks. The reason why is because we all get into that recency bias. We think, oh, Clemson just knocked off Duke. Clemson is now the greatest thing since sliced bread. They went on the run and they knocked off North Carolina. But what a lot of people forget is that in order for Clemson to get that win against North Carolina, North Carolina had to upchuck a double-digit lead with 2 minutes to go. Duke just had absolutely nothing go right for them yesterday. I was watching that game. I think that the end of the first half sequence where Duke just botched a layup and it was just a giant comedy of bloopers, that was really the night for Duke right there. And you need to try to watch these games and try to evaluate, okay, what game is really reflective of the final score? Because not every 10-point win, 10-point loss is built equally. You could have some team that is down like 2 points going into the final minute. They wind up losing by 10 because they just get into the hackathon. You have a bunch of turnovers. I would say that the Louisville versus Kentucky game earlier this year is a very good example of that. Louisville and Kentucky tied with about 45 seconds left in overtime, but it goes down as an 8-point loss because Louisville just threw up over their own shoes in the final 45 seconds of the game. Meanwhile, there are other 8-point losses where the team is getting blown out by 15, but they drain a couple garbage threes to be able to cover the spread and things of that nature. And then, heck, how about the greatest one of all? How about the Syracuse versus Virginia game going over on Saturday? That was one of those things where it goes down as an over, but how much can you really take stock into that when Syracuse had to score more points in overtime than they did in the second half in order to get that over? Just one of those outlier situations that you need to take into account, because what you want to try to do is get an actual true reflection of who the team is rather than just looking at, oh, they're this against the over under, or they're this against the spread record as well. I think that sometimes we get lost in just looking at the raw numbers and not how we got there.
So again, when we talk about college basketball, I mean, we're betting on kids that are 18 to 23 years old in most cases. So coaching is a really big impact. And you talk about maybe losing a game that you shouldn't. You talk about, you know, the Maryland in true road games. How do you factor coaching into this whole handicapping puzzle?
Coaching is absolutely paramount because we've seen so many good coaches be great bet on guys. I still remember John Beilein coming off a straight up loss the last 2 years. Obviously he's not in college basketball this year, but the 2 years prior, 13-1 against the spread coming off a straight up loss. That shows you right there that this is a guy that he's able to get his team up. He's able to make adjustments when things don't go right for his team. And then there are other coaches that they're a little bit of a fade, and there's a big reason. And there's another reason why with regards to road games as well, something that I noticed with regards to Weber State, team out there in the Big Sky Conference. Ever since Randy Rahe take over as the head coach, the team is about 60% to the over in true road games. This is a 15-year sample, and they are 60% to the over in true road games. It's not one of these things where, oh, they're 60% last year or anything like that. That's the entire part of it. And we're even seeing it with some of these teams like St. John's. St. John's has Mike Anderson take over at the helm. Last year, they were not playing a lick of defense. Mike Anderson comes over from Arkansas. His Arkansas team last year hit 70% of their games to the under. What are we noticing with St. John's this year? They've become an under team. You got in a guy that is really able to play a little bit more of a defense-oriented style in Nick Rutherford, who does a nice job of being able to run the point guard spot. He doles out a couple assists, but he doesn't necessarily give the team a lot of points. A style is very important. Heck, just take a look at Alabama. This year, once again, talking about totals, they were 155th in the country with regards to possessions per game last year. This year, they're in the top 10. Coaching is huge, especially when it comes to tempos.
So is that sort of something where it's just kind of the tipping point for you on a game? It's just all part of, you know, your complete workup when it comes to, again, playing every side and every total. you know, you can't do a deep dive on every coach in every individual scenario in every particular matchup. But is that sort of a tipping point for you where your number may be, you know, right on what the market line is? And you say, well, I'm going to trust this coach in this spot.
It's one of those cases where I actually might shade a number up or down a point or two based on the coach as well, because Leonard Hamilton prior to this year had been doing a terrible job with Florida State. This is a team that you never wanted to lay points with. But when you were getting points, you actually felt pretty decent with Florida State. The big reason why is because in these games that are about 6 to 8 points or so, there are some teams that they are going to fall to the death, and there are other teams that they're going to let it go. Florida State was always one of those teams that seemed like they would just let the game go. We all remember in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago, they certainly did that. Michigan is up 4 points with 15 seconds to go. They wind up not giving the foul. Michigan goes to the Final Four. That is what I would say is actually the biggest part of coaching in general, because there are some coaches that they are masters at being able to extend a game. Jay Wright, whenever Villanova's down by 6, he is going to start hacking at that 1 minute mark, and he is going to hack, hack, hack. They do an absolutely tremendous job of just making that final minute turn into about 20 minutes in real time. There are other coaches, like I was mentioning earlier, with guys like Leonard Hamilton, they don't necessarily do that. I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to handicapping. If you're seeing a 6 to 8 point game, you think that there's going to be a late game fouling. How do you think that that situation is going to go? Because every coach plays them differently.
So let's talk for a second here about totals betting. I think totals betting is something that, you know, maybe more people feel a little bit more comfortable with than trying to play the sides, trying to figure out, you know, all the different things about these teams. What stats are you most reliant on as you kind of put together your totals numbers and then go ahead and act on them?
What was the question? I'm sorry. I was.
Oh, sorry about that. When it comes to totals betting, you know, what are some of the stats that you're most reliant on when you're putting together your numbers?
I think the most obvious one is possessions per game. When you take a look at a team, because obviously more possessions in a game means more points, fewer possessions means fewer points. And I always have a little bit of a philosophy that it's easier to slow a game down than it is to speed one up. But we have noticed a couple teams that are resistant to it. Mississippi Valley State just seems to be running it up the court. It does not matter the situation. They are just going to try to get as many possessions in a game as possible, despite the fact that they're one of the bottom teams with regards to offensive efficiency. Now, tip my hat to them. They wound up knocking off Alabama A&M on Monday, but by and large, it has not been going well for Lindsey Hunter. And then we're noticing out there in the Southland as well, just all these teams are playing fast, fast, fast. And a big thing that you want to note as well is steals per game. You don't just want to note the amount of turnovers, but you might want to note the type of turnovers as well, because a live ball steal can lead to an easy run out layup, where as a ball that is just thrown out of bounds, you have to have the other team running out of bounds play and everything like that. You don't really get that opportunity at a fast play break layup. So not just looking at turnovers per game, but looking at the amount of turnovers per game. And then obviously rebounds as well. A team that gets a lot of offensive rebounds probably going to be going to the line quite a bit if they're putting up that second, third chance opportunity. And it's all taking these things into account, because when you take a look at college basketball, there are so many stats out there. Offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, these pair very well with regards to possessions, because it's more important to know how many points a team is scoring per possession rather than per game, because every game is its own living, breathing entity and has its own tempo.
So do you find that the totals are better for you, or is it sides? Do you think one market's easier to beat than another?
I have had this question asked to me so many times. In my experience, the totals have a little bit of a better record, because with totals, you're typically betting at minus 110. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's very few times where you're going to be betting a very heavily juiced, like 140.5 on a total. You might find it at like 115, but you're not going to find it shot up to the moon like a money line. And I'm someone that I take a lot of money line underdogs myself. So that means that with some of these sides, I'm taking something like, for instance, today I was on Lafayette on the money line against Colgate. I'm taking Lafayette as a money line underdog for one unit, trying to get a plus price. This thing wound up closing right around like plus 150 in some spots. So they're obviously taking a little bit more of a risk rather than betting a total at minus 110, which is pretty much a norm when it comes to that. So with regards to actual record, it would have to be totals just because of that. But it, with regards to actual units won, units lost, it's pretty equal.
So what is your tipping point now? I know that you've mentioned a few times that, you know, the money line plays have done well, have maybe turned a slight negative day into a little bit of a positive day, something like that. What's the tipping point for you to play the money line as opposed to the spread?
I have to think that that team is going to win outright. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, because with college basketball, unlike baseball, where you're taking a bunch of plus money line dogs and everything like that, you really have only two options in baseball. You have the run line, or you have the money line. There's really not a whole lot else. I do recognize that now we are seeing more of a coming of age of alternate totals, alternate spreads, where you can take like 2.5 and things like that. But we know that in baseball, a game can turn into like a 5-run game so easily that it's not even funny. But for me, it's just one of those situations where when I'm taking a look at a college basketball game, do I think that the wrong team is favored? That's when I start jumping in on the money line, because if I think that a team might have a chance to be able to pull it off outright, but they're catching something like 6 to 7 points, I'm typically going to play it safe and take the points. For me, a lot of these money line underdogs are teams that are like a 2-3 point underdog. It's a little bit of juice mitigation for one, and it's because I think that that team has a better than 50% chance of being able to win the game outright.
So it's a fairly decent sized card here for tonight. It's not as big as a Saturday. It's a little bit bigger than most nights that we typically see. A day like today, Wednesday, January 15th here, how long does it take you to get through the card?
It takes me a little bit. Obviously, when you get a card like Monday where you got one game on the normal Las Vegas betting board and a couple extra games, it doesn't take me very long. But this is one of these situations where every day with regards to my college basketball handicapping, I'm taking a look at things before noon. I'm trying to get as much of a jump start as possible. I'm running my numbers thinking, okay, what is the final score going to be in like Notre Dame versus Georgia Tech? What would I make it in Vanderbilt, Arkansas? And then you're taking a look at the offshore openers, which actually have now been coming out more around the noonish range, seeing, okay, this line is good, this line is bad. Should I fire in right now? Should I wait for a couple more openers? Should I let the steam come in? So that is a lot of what goes into it. And then obviously I do my podcast breaking down every single game. But in my mind, I sort of have to be doing injury information, injury research, because we know that with Vanderbilt, they're going to be without Aaron Nesmith for the rest of the year. Who's going to be getting those minutes in his spot? It's one of these situations where even on a light day like a Monday, what I'm doing is future research, taking a look at some of these injuries, taking a look back at the weekend before. Because my goal is with college basketball to try to do the same amount of work every single day. So that means that the tons and ton of work that I do on Friday, it's mitigated a little bit by doing my research earlier in the week, looking back at some of those results for some of those teams that maybe do have like 6 or 7 days off prior to playing on Saturday once again. It's one of those things where your work is really never done as a college basketball handicapper.
All right, so let's take a look at a few games here on Wednesday night. We take a look at games 783, 784, Kentucky and South Carolina. And, you know, one of the things in both college basketball and especially here this year in college football, you know, we do have our fair share of elite teams. We've got our share of absolute bottom feeders and a lot of teams in the middle. And you've got a South Carolina team here, very wide range of outcomes so far. They can have the ceiling to beat Virginia. They can also have the floor to lose to Stetson. How do you handicap a situation like that where they take on obviously a very, very talented Kentucky team getting 5.5 or 6 at home?
I think what's interesting here with South Carolina is noting some of the injuries that they've had. Jermaine Cousinard, the point guard of this team, was out for quite a bit. I believe that he returned in the team's last game, might have been 2 games ago, but he's given the team a little bit more stability. He averages 2.5 assists per game. Fewer than 2 turnovers per game. But like you mentioned, the South Carolina team is a little bit inconsistent. A big reason why, you've got a point guard in AJ Lawson that he's been able to put in the ball 14.5 points per game, but at the same time, he's not necessarily a great 3-point shooter. He's one of those guys that he alternates great performances with performances that, let's face it, they leave a whole lot to be desired. And that's something that you want to take a look at as well. With regards to your handicapping, you want to take a look at just how the guys have been playing so far this year, because you can see a guy that on a base level is averaging 13 points per game, but Is he giving you like 12 points one night, 14 points the next, 15, 11, where you have some consistency? Or do you have a situation where the guy is like pouring in there 35 points on one night, the next two nights he gives you a combined 7? These are guys that you want to be avoiding a little bit just because you don't know what you're going to get night to night. Because with Kentucky, we know that night to night, this is a team that doesn't necessarily shoot it well from three, but you've got a little bit more stability down low. Nick Richards, EJ Montgomery, Nate Cicina all do a very good job of being able to give the team some rebounds. With Cicina, we're seeing him step up with regards to his three-point shooting percentage as well. With South Carolina, you mentioned it, they've already lost on their home floor to Stetson. But at the same time, they've been able to get a nice double-digit win against Virginia as well. So this is a team that gets a little bit tough to be able to handicap. But I do think that this is a spot where you've got to be trusting in a little bit more of a known commodity, a Kentucky team that already went on the road last week and was able to knock off Georgia by 9 points, even when there was injury questions, I guess you could say, about Ashton Hagans.
Real quickly here, just in general, your thoughts on the Kentucky Wildcats, because a lot of people now with college football over or the NFL coming to a close here, you know, we got two games this weekend, the Super Bowl in 2 weeks' time. A lot of people are going to start leaking into the college basketball market, and they're going to want to bet teams that they feel like they can trust year in and year out, like a Kentucky, like a Duke, the Blue Bloods of the world. Just in general, what do you think Kentucky's ceiling is?
I think that this is a team that could be able to make another big run in March Madness. The big reason why is because you take a look at their early losses against the teams like Evansville, Utah. They had some players out for a lot of those games. Nate Cicina wound up not playing against Utah. EJ Montgomery was out of the fold when the team played against Evansville. And it's one of these situations in which you've got a lot of guys that are just very inconsistent in general at the beginning of the year with Kentucky. We've seen it time and time again, but for Coach Calipari always seems to be getting his team playing its best in March. And I think that that's a hallmark of this Kentucky team, because you've always got so many young players on this team. You bring in all the blue blood players, and we always notice that it takes freshmen a couple games in order to get acclimated to their surroundings. And I think that this is a Kentucky team that if you're someone that you jump into college basketball in February, you're really getting the best of them rather than in November, where you're sort of getting a team that might be a bit more disjointed.
Well, an excellent tip there from Greg. You know, if you see something that kind of looks like a real outlier performance, go find out why. Did somebody not play? Did they shoot like 10% from three? Something like that. You know, if you're just now getting into college basketball and you see something that doesn't look like it makes sense, go find out the reason why. And a lot of times, as Greg mentioned, you're going to find that some players were injured, some key guys weren't able to play, something like that. A couple other games I want to touch on here for tonight. How about game 789-790, Creighton and Georgetown? Pretty interesting one here. Creighton getting into the top 25. Georgetown, pretty solid team here in what is a very, very good Big East conference. What do you think about this one tonight in the D.C. area?
With Georgetown, I think that this is a bunch that they really look to play at a very fast tempo, because with Georgetown, what I think is very interesting is that Mac McClung was out of the fold for this team a few weeks ago, and we saw the offense really sputter. We remember that game against Providence in which he was on the fold. I think that they got down two touchdowns before they wound up scoring their first points. Meanwhile, you got a Creighton team that they lead the Big East with regards to three-point shooting percentage. Guys like Tayshaun Alexander, Marcus Zagorowski and company, they all do a great job of putting the ball in the basket. But with Georgetown, they have been a different team home to road as well. With Creighton, you do have a team that shoots a lot of threes, and that's something that doesn't necessarily travel the best on the road. I think that's part of the reason why we've seen Georgetown open up as a 1.5-point favorite, is out up between 2.5 and 3. When you take a look at what Creighton is able to do, they're just not necessarily pounding the glass. And with Georgetown, Omar, you're at 7, a little bit more of a stabilizing force down low, gives the team 9.5 rebounds, nearly 16 points per game. So this is a spot where I do think that Georgetown is in a good spot to be able to get right against a Creighton team that they're very good at home. True road games and even neutral court games, we've seen them sputter just because it's harder to duplicate three-point shooting rather than a Georgetown style in which they look to play with their hair on fire, but at the same time, they're not taking a lot of threes. They're looking to go down low a bit more.
All right, so last game I want to touch on with you here, game 857-858 is Stanford and UCLA. And I saw this is one that you've been talking about a little bit with some of your followers on Twitter. And make sure you follow Greg on Twitter, at GUnit_81. But Stanford and UCLA, a game that's had some pretty interesting kind of yo-yoing of the line back and forth, where Stanford opened a favorite, line flipped to UCLA. Now it's coming back a little bit.
Yeah, I am not necessarily sure why this team was coming in on UCLA. People are trying to speculate injuries. I have not seen any information whatsoever on it. I'm one of those people, I always recommend that if you think there might be an injury out there, check local Twitter beat writers personally, and I saw absolutely nothing of it. And I think that it goes back to your point a little bit earlier about people jumping in on college basketball, wanting to take these blue bloods like UCLA. I think that there are a lot of people that are betting on UCLA that don't realize that this team has already lost on their home floor, Cal State Fullerton so far this year. They were pushed to the brink by Long Beach State. And this is a Stanford team that it's just not getting a lot of respect in general. This is a bunch that they haven't made the NCAA tournament in quite a few years, but they rank at the top 10 with regards to defensive efficiency. They do a very nice job of just being able to give a little bit of everything on the offensive end as well, with a guy like DeJuan Davis giving out 3.5 assists, only 2 turnovers. Oscar Da Silva, 2 years ago, was the top 3-point shooter with regards to percentage in all of college basketball among qualified players. Last year, that was more like 25%. He has found his watermark this year, though, giving the team 15.5 points. Shoots a couple threes, shooting right around 33 to 34% from distance. And then you've got a bunch of guys in the Stanford backcourt that just really know the role as well. The freshmen have come alive. Meanwhile, with UCLA, they're in one of those tempo changes I was noting earlier. Last year, in the top 30 with regards to possessions per game, you've got a lot of players from last year that are still there this year, and they're playing in the 300s with regards to possessions per game, and they haven't really adapted to that style. I know that Stanford is hitting the road, but we've noticed that Pauley Pavilion has not been the same in past years as well. We've seen teams like Liberty, I mentioned Cal State Fullerton, Radford, be able to knock off UCLA on their home floor the last 2 years, and I think that this is a very good spot for Stanford to be able to make a statement and get another one out there in the Pac-12.
Yeah, again, very important to realize. I mean, I know there's a lot of stability with teams like a Duke and North Carolina, stuff like that in terms of their head coach, but a very big change for UCLA. Seems like, again, as you mentioned, maybe some people getting into the market now, not fully grasping the difference with Mick Cronin now and also the growing pains that have come along with that. Let's transition over to the NFL playoffs here for a couple of minutes. 7.5, the number on both of these games here. San Francisco favored at home over Green Bay. Tennessee getting points at Kansas City. Big difference between the totals in the two games, though. Green Bay, San Francisco, 45. Tennessee, Kansas City, 52.5 out there. Your thoughts here with both of these lines at 7.5 for this weekend, Greg?
I think that this is one of these spots in which Green Bay just is a team that doesn't stand up to San Francisco. I am personally a Green Bay Packers fan. I do not know why, but San Francisco has always had the number of the Green Bay Packers. It doesn't matter whether Colin Kaepernick is under center, Steve Young. Heck, I think that they could go out there and they could get Y.A. Tittle to be under center against the Green Bay Packers. They just never play well against these San Francisco 49ers. And with the Packers, what they don't match up well on is just the line play in general. San Francisco, number one team in the NFL with regards to sacks per defensive play. And then you take a look at the Packers, they don't necessarily hold up there. They do have Aaron Jones that does a good job of riding the ball. But with San Francisco, I feel like this is the most balanced team in all of football. But I think that it's going to be a little bit of a different parallel with regards to the AFC side, because we saw Kansas City roll up the points on the Houston Texans. With the Texans, they wind up getting up by a count of 21-0. It was just a complete blowout at the beginning of the game. And then, obviously, the Chiefs turned the tables. They wind up winning the game by 20-plus. So I think that what you're going to need to do if you're the Tennessee Titans is exactly what you've been doing all playoffs along. Get the ball to Derrick Henry. Slow the game down. Because the first time these two teams played, both these teams were able to get to 30. I think the Titans have learned their lesson. They've got a guy in Ryan Tannehill that is obviously not going to light up a defense, but at the same time, he does a good job of just being able to manage a game. I think it's going under the radar just how smart Mike Vrabel was for cutting ties with Marcus Mariota, a guy that was highly drafted, a guy that was making a bunch of money, but at the same time, just wasn't doing the job of going with Ryan Tannehill, a guy that I feel like a lot of people soured on and a lot of people said, oh, he's a transition wide receiver trying to play quarterback. And I think that it's going to lead to a game in which the Titans are going to be able to hang in there because they do exactly what the Chiefs are not necessarily doing a great job of, and that is running the ball. With the Chiefs, they've been significantly better on defense ever since the middle of the season. And I think this is a game that's going to be slowed down because I think that there's going to be a little bit of recency bias on the Chiefs seeing them score all those points. And what they don't realize is that the Chiefs defense has actually been quite solid the last couple of weeks as well.
All right, so it sounds like you like San Francisco in the NFC game. Looks like you're kind of thinking the under maybe a little bit here in this AFC game. Do we get Kansas City, San Francisco in the Super Bowl, though?
I do think that we see Kansas City in the Super Bowl. I think that the Titans do cover the number. And then I certainly think that San Francisco should be able to win. I think that they should be able to cover. There's a reason why this line in Green Bay versus San Francisco has gone from 7 to 7.5, and I think that it's the right move.
Greg Peterson, you can hear him on his Hoopin' with Hoops podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at GUnit_81 and also hear him at VSiN and see him in that Point Spread Weekly newsletter. Greg, tell us a little bit more about the podcast that you do.
I do a podcast where I break down every side in total every single day from a betting standpoint. That is called Hoopin' with Hoops. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcast. And then, like you said, I contribute to the Vegas Stats and Information Network. I do some work with our good buddy Wes Reynolds, who's going to be coming up next. And we pick college basketball look headlines. I always write up something where I have a little bit of a feature on something that I'm noticing in college basketball in general. This week, it's Southland over. So it is one of these things where I just try to give you a little bit more information on trends that I'm seeing in college basketball. And then obviously just some good information to help you become a little bit of a better handicapper as well. And the hub for everything that I do with regards to appearances, all the written work, New York Post articles, all that at GUnit_81.
Greg Peterson at GUnit_81. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your day. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.